I'm Joy Manning, a freelance writer focused on food and health.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, creator of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about baked beans, sunflower ranch, and homemade baby food. But first, let's talk about some news.
So, Joy, you have some really good news to share. You want me to announce it or you want to?
Sure. I was nominated for an IACP Writing Award.
You were. I am so proud of you.
For those who don't know, IACP stands for the International Association for Culinary Professionals. Marisa and I are longtime members. Every year they do awards in many categories for cookbooks and media. And I was really thrilled to have one of my pieces nominated this year.
What was the piece?
It was an article called Is There Such a Thing as Humane Veal? Which we may have discussed on this show.
We did.
I wrote one up for when I was on staff for Edible Communities for a brief 6 months last year. Edible Communities is the parent organization for all the edible magazines around the U.S. and Canada. And it was really just about people's assumptions about veal, which are pretty knee-jerk, mm-hmm. and the reality of dairy production and baby cows, you know?
Yeah.
The gist of the article is where there is artisan or even, you know, non-artisan milk and cheese, there are baby boy cows that are not of use to the farm. Mm-hmm. And often they are, sadly, just killed right on the farm. And sometimes they're taken to auction where they will be, you know, maybe put into some industrial dog food or something. Like, I mean, terrible things happen at those auctions. But some forward-thinking producers, I highlighted Sue Miller, who is local to us in this area, started raising those cows for veal in a way that is much more humane than what you think, which, you know, they're not separated from their mothers. They're not confined. The idea is that when we eat veal, we're killing baby cows, but the reality is they're the same age as other animals that we kill to eat. So if eating quote unquote baby animals is objectionable to you, then you also need to stop eating bacon and chicken, you know?
Yeah.
This is all kind of weird given that since I wrote that article, I've stopped eating all animal products, but it isn't because of the ethics of meat. Like, I do think that Sue Miller's veal is an ethical choice, you know? And I don't think it's particularly destructive to the environment. It's not cheap, so you're probably going to have it only occasionally. But, like, it does help keep her farm afloat. And if you're going to eat cheese, you have to realize that veal is kind of like a byproduct. Anyway, I'll post a link to the story. Even though I'm not in the business of eating veal anymore, I definitely think it's an interesting piece. I'm really proud and excited that I got nominated.
Yeah, I'm so happy for you. It's really great.
Thank you.
And, you know, it's always nice to have your hard work acknowledged.
Can I say just one other thing about
this? Yeah, absolutely.
Which, like, this is the type of thing. And when we do this podcast, I always act like it's just you and me and no one is going to hear this. So I tell you some things that, like, I maybe wouldn't tell everyone, but I, you know, outside of our podcast community. It was a little bittersweet because, as I mentioned, I was on staff at the time.
Yeah.
And I have been nominated for a major award one other time, also when I was on staff. And I can't help but think that not just for me, but for everyone who works in the gig economy, like, there's a level of security that comes with being on staff and having a full-time job that allows you to do your best and most creative work.
It's true.
And I find it sad and frustrating that there are not more opportunities for writers, including me, to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will say I have real mixed emotions about award nominations because I never win anything. I've never been nominated.
Never won anything. I'm not going to win this either.
You might.
There's a New York Times Magazine writer also nominated in my category, but go on.
You know, just the awards are such a popularity contest, and we all know this.
Do you think so?
Yes.
I don't know how I got nominated.
I've been nominated for the Savour Blog Awards four times, and I've not won. But my cookbooks never get nominated for anything, and I think it's in part because canning is not a hip or hot topic.
Hmm.
And I've really had to do a lot of internal work to be okay with it because because it feels like such an external validation.
Oh, yeah.
And when you don't get that external validation, you have to keep on plugging away. It gets hard sometimes. But I have come to realize that for me, when people cook my recipes, when they cook from my books and I get feedback from them in that way, that I look at that as those awards.
And yeah. I just realized when you said external validation, you were saying that as a good thing.
Well, no, I'm not saying it is a good, I wasn't putting a value judgment on it at all, but we all crave external validation.
That's true. Although I will say that when I was nominated for the James Beard Award in 2012 or 2013, my feelings about it were a lot different than they are now.
Yeah.
It's much less, the whole award system and like all of that has much less sway over me.
Yeah.
It is much less fraught. It has even less, I'm excited and I'm honored to be nominated for this award, but it has less meaning than it used to, I think.
I think the only thing that I still feel a little bit like that I long for a nomination or an award for is simply that it increases your book sales.
Always a good thing.
And, you know, as someone who books have been a big part of how I've made money over the last 8 years, and my books don't sell as well right now as they did when the first one came out, there's part of me that's like, oh, it would be so nice to get an award because then people would go buy my book.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's...
It seems to be true.
That's a different feeling than like, oh, I need to be told that I'm good enough, you know?
Yeah.
Which, and I'll tell you something as a nominee.
Yeah.
When you have been a nominee, it doesn't make that feeling go away. No, you're just not an award winner.
Oh, I know. I mean, those Savor Blog Awards, they kind of work you over a little because I realized too, the last time I went to the event, all of the staff people at Savor knew who the winners were. And I should have known how they were treating me that I wasn't a winner.
Huh. That's interesting.
It's a strange world.
But I'll tell you something else. I bet the winners, the minute the smoke clears, they start thinking to themselves, well, that was last month, or what am I going to do that's going to top that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. But I appreciate your congratulations. I am proud of the article.
I am delighted for you simply because I think you're great and I'm happy when you're acknowledged, Joy.
Thank you. I think you're great and I want to acknowledge you all the time.
Thank you so much.
Anyway, let's talk about what's for dinner.
I wanted to talk about baked beans. Because
did you put this on the list or did I?
I think I did first.
Because I also made
baked beans.
Have you made baked beans?
Yes, okay.
You go.
So I made them maybe a month ago now. I used the recipe in the Rancho Gordo original heirloom beans cookbook, but I did it a little differently because I didn't want to use bacon. And so what I did is I chopped up a red pepper and chopped the onions. They have you layer the onions.
And
I chopped them. And so I cooked it down with the chopped pepper and the chopped onions and then basically followed the rest of the instructions. And they were so good. I just feel like we should, like, why are we not bringing back baked beans? Beans are being celebrated in all these other ways. Just a classic baked bean is so good.
I wonder how similar it is to the recipe I made, which was from the Rancho Gordo
newsletter. Right?
Yes. It had a lot of molasses in it, a little brown sugar, some tomato paste, some mustard powder.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. I think that they just adapted their own recipe.
And then it did have the sliced onions layered between the beans.
Yeah.
Did you get the yellow beans or did you use a different kind of beans? The yellow eye beans is what they
recommend. I used a small white bean. I don't remember which variety it was. Mm-hmm. I hadn't bought them thinking I was going to make baked beans. And so I had ordered a box of Rancho Gordo beans and then I just picked the ones that seemed the most appropriate. I didn't layer the onions because I knew I wouldn't like the finished texture.
Dan didn't love that.
And so I just chopped. But they were great.
Oh my God. How long did you bake yours?
I cooked the beans almost to tender before I mixed them all the ingredients because I knew in the past that I don't always like the texture of a bean that hasn't been fully cooked if you mix it with tomato because it gets a little – like the acid in the tomato sometimes prevents the bean from finishing
cooking, yeah.
And so I cooked them fully to soft and then combined the ingredients and then I cooked them for like 3.5 hours.
I cooked mine for at least 7 hours.
Did you really? Wow.
Not because I was trying to get my beans soft,
yeah,
but because I wanted that clingy, thick sauce.
Yeah.
I think next time I'll do it in a larger pot.
Oh, more surface area?
Yeah. But I agree. Where is the Baked Beans fan club. Like, why is this not a classic thing? I mean, it is a classic thing, but it's not really a ballyhooed classic thing.
Well, and it made me want to make Boston baked bread, like Boston brown bread in a tin can.
Right.
To, like, have the full baked bean and Boston bread experience. Like,
what did you do? What did you serve with it?
One night, I don't even remember at this point. I think one night we had, like, some pulled chicken thighs. Mm-hmm. And then another night, the beans were the main dish, and we ate them with, like, some roasted vegetables, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
They were so good.
We had them three nights during the same week, uh-huh. and we had them with cornbread and coleslaw. And it was, like,
perfect. Yeah.
If I get invited to a barbecue ever, this is what I will be bringing, because it would be like the perfect side thing if you're having a burger or whatever, but it's also a really great main dish.
Yeah.
If you want to keep it vegetarian. We liked it so much, we ordered 6 more pounds of the yellow-eyed beans. We thought we should always have this.
Yeah.
The one thing I did with the recipe is I added like a half teaspoon of liquid smoke.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I love smoky things.
You know, I stirred a little smoked paprika into mine for that same thing. The only thing I felt that I would do differently next time is that I would add a little touch of vinegar, like some apple cider vinegar or something. Mm-hmm. I wanted a slightly sharper edge mm-hmm. to balance the sweetness of the molasses.
Yeah. And it was plenty sweet.
Yeah.
So good though.
But so good. And so worth doing, because they are miles ahead of any canned baked beans that you could possibly buy.
I'm not sure I've ever had
really
canned baked beans.
They were a staple in my house when I was growing up. My mom always kept vegetarian baked beans, canned baked beans in the pantry. I think she liked them.
I think I would like them, to be honest.
But it was also like an easy side dish. There was a lot of baked beans and hot dogs in my childhood for when my mom didn't want to cook.
So interesting, giving everything I know about your mom.
Well, it was a 99% fat-free turkey hot dog.
Oh, okay. That explains everything.
and if organics had been a thing in the 80s, they would have been organic, mm-hmm. but nobody was thinking about organic hot dogs in 1986.
Yeah.
But she would serve us vegetarian canned baked beans and practically fat-free turkey hot dogs when she didn't know what to make for dinner.
This baked bean recipe that we both seem to have made, I think it would have been equally good with canned beans, because the sauce is really flavorful.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's a high-quality canned bean where it's not broken, but like a nice canned like a navy bean, yeah, would be perfect.
I don't think either one of us has looked on the internet to see if this recipe is there, but we'll look.
I'm not sure, but there are lots of baked bean recipes.
Yeah, I'll try to find one that's like close enough. And
I would say that if you want the texture of something that mimics like the bacon or the mm-hmm. Salt pork that they call for, that chopped pepper, like a chopped red or yellow or orange pepper, really adds the texture nicely without it adding meat.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
The recipe I made didn't actually call for any meat.
Well, so I was adapting their classic one that had meat in it. And you did the vegetarian version of what I think it's the same recipe, because they're both from Rancho Gordo. And I don't imagine they would change up their recipe too much.
I can't believe that Rancho Gordo is getting all of this lip service from us for free.
They should send us some beans.
Well, if they weren't doing so much good for the world, I would probably be less inclined to name them by name.
But. Well, and one more interesting thing. So they sent out their newsletter recently, and they included a link to an article that Allison Robicelli did for The Takeout.
I read that.
And it was so interesting about her comparison between Rancho Gordo beans and grocery store beans.
The interesting thing about the article is it had a very skeptical take.
Yeah, she was not sold, and then she was sold.
And she bought the very workaday beans. None of these I've been enjoying a lot of the fancy beans, and I think you have as well.
By fancy,
I mean unusual.
I certainly will buy the like bags of Goya from the Acme to have around sometimes.
I have purchased their chickpeas, and I have to tell you, I don't think they're any better than Whole Foods bulk chickpeas.
Yeah.
Their black beans, though, I think are much better than any dried black beans I've gotten my hands on.
Their pinto beans are better than like the commodity pintos. Yeah. I'd made pinto beans from like a bag of Goya beans recently. And one, I cooked them in the pressure cooker for 35 minutes and they weren't done, and I had to add another 5 minutes. And they were fine, but the liquid was thin.
Hmm.
And you never get a thin liquid from a Rancho Gordo bean.
It's so good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's move on to our next topic before we...
We're wildly off course here, but that's okay.
It's fine. I can do sunflower ranch real quick.
Well, yeah, go. Tell me about it.
This is our How Did You Make That segment. And you know that I've made tons of cashew-based sauces and dressings. But I got the latest issue of Veg News because now I'm a subscriber since I'm a vegan and all that now. and there was a recipe in there for this sunflower ranch that looked really good. I like a ranch of any variety.
Me too.
But this one, it starts with sunflower seeds. And you it does say to soak them, which I did because I'm obedient. I don't think – next time I do it, I'll probably see if I can get away with not doing it with my Vitamix. But the thing that made it really creamy and ranchy is that you blend it with like a plant milk and not water.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yes. I can see that.
So it definitely had like a – I don't want to say dairy, but like – definitely like a ranchy feeling.
Do you toast the seeds or are they raw?
The seeds? The seeds. No, you do not toast them. Okay. They're raw. And it calls for all dried spices. And I think that there's something about that that really recalls Hidden Valley Ranch, which is everybody's favorite ranch,
I think. Of course it is.
And sort of
it
like
– it is the superior ranch.
Created what we think of as ranch. And it's just really good.
No, it sounds great. And I mean, I'm a big proponent of sunflower seeds. Like they can do so much and they make such good nut butter that I'm not surprised they would make a good
very creamy
ranch-based dip.
And so it's just the sunflower seeds, the plant milk, perhaps a touch of lemon juice or vinegar, and then the dried spices and salt, and you're good to go. It's so easy. And not only is it wonderful for salads, which it definitely is, I found myself really loving it with like sliced up carrot sticks.
As one enjoys ranch sometimes.
I have been a little bit hard up for vegan snacks if we don't have hummus, say. And so I've been buying a lot of carrots and cutting them into sticks. And I like carrot sticks either with like spices sprinkled on them or dipped in this sunflower ranch. So I'm going to post a link to it. I can't find it on the Veg News site, but I did find a version of it on the Washington Post website.
Oh, interesting.
But be aware, they call for fresh herbs, those snobs. and if you wanted to taste like a Hidden Valley Ranch, you should use the dried. So
I'm in. Okay. So, I want to talk a little bit about making baby food because I have started making baby food for my two boys and
are they eating mostly food or are they still eating mostly milk?
They are sort of 50-50 right now. They eat real food maybe three times a day and then they have some formula and then they nurse a lot. Mm-hmm. So, cause I've always done a combination of breastfeeding and formula and they've been eating little bits and tastes of things since 4 months, since that is when my pediatrician recommended we start. And they're definitely hungry for food these days. And so in an average day, they'll have some yogurt. They'll have, some baby oatmeal with some powdered peanut butter in it because we are one of the like things in feeding babies these days is that to prevent peanut butter allergies, you start introducing.
Exposing.
Yes, soon, early. And so they have some baby oatmeal made with either breast milk or formula and powdered peanut butter.
Was that scary? Like the first time you did it?
It wasn't only because peanut allergies don't really seem to, like nobody in my family has them. So I didn't expect.
Are they genetic?
I don't know if they're genetic, but it's also, it's very rare for babies to have allergies that young.
Okay.
And I also had the Benadryl standing by. Like if they had started to get hives or, you know, seeming to have a reaction,
but
we would have,
fine.
They were fine.
Lucky them.
Yeah. Hopefully they never have an issue with peanut butter or peanuts of any kind or nuts of any kind. The other thing you're supposed to introduce early is eggs, but I haven't found a way to make eggs that they will actually eat.
Hmm.
So I'm still working on that. But so I've started doing at first. So here's the thing. I was really struggling with baby food. Like, how do I approach this? Because there are all of these different schools of thought with feeding babies. There's
what are they?
Baby-led weaning, which is this practice where instead of ever giving your babies purees, you give them very soft cooked real food. And just put it on their tray and let them pick it up and, you know, try it and reject it as they want to.
Even though they have no teeth?
Yeah. It's so soft that they can gum it. I tried that a couple times. One, it made Scott really nervous.
I can see that.
It made him very uncomfortable. Like I would give them little bits of, like I gave them tiny chunks of pancake one day and they just didn't know what to do with it. Then they got it in their mouth and they started choking.
Yeah, that would also scare me.
I tried to shift them from baby oatmeal to like regular rolled oats that I had pureed and cooked.
What's baby oatmeal?
It's basically just oatmeal that has been pre-cooked and then dried and then powdered and it's fortified with vitamins that babies need. So you don't have to really cook it long. You just mix it with a hot liquid and then I tend to microwave it for like 30 seconds just to warm it up a little bit.
So it's like a paste.
Mm-hmm. And they did not like regular rolled oats, even if they were pulverized and cooked real well.
But they do like baby oatmeal.
They do like baby oatmeal. And so they're not into texture. I've tried and tried, but I...
Well, how old are they? 7 or 8 months old?
They're almost 8 months old. By the time this airs, they'll be 8 months. So yes.
They don't have teeth. Of course they don't like texture.
But I know. Anyway. But anyway, so I'd done all this reading. I was trying the baby-led weaning thing. It wasn't working. And they were hungry. They wanted food. And so, but I was not sure what to make them. I wasn't sure what kind of combinations to do. And so I was just giving them applesauce and pear sauce that I had made in the beginning, which they were fine with. They thought that was terrific. But so one day I went to the baby food section of Target mm-hmm. and looked at all the pouches. And then I bought several of them just to see what would they like? Would they try this? Mm-hmm. And what I found is that as long as there was something sweet in the mix, so whether it was applesauce or pears or banana, that they would eat any of it.
So your children, it turns out, are human.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. They want it to be a little bit sweet and they want it to be nice and pureed, but then they'll eat it. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a lot of confidence to start exploring more. So what I've been doing a lot is sort of applesauce-based purees with other fruits and vegetables, mostly vegetables, because I want to introduce them to vegetables. We've got to get veggies in there. And it's been working. So I've done apple kabocha squash. I did apple broccoli. We've done apple beet. That was a favorite because beets are sweet and mm-hmm. apples are sweet. So
how'd the broccoli go over?
Surprisingly well. They were happy to kind of suck that down. So, and so this weekend, my plan is to make something with chicken in it because they haven't really had any meat yet. And
will you put it in the blender?
Yeah. So I'm going to, I'm going to cook it in the Instant Pot and combine some chicken breast and some sweet potato and just under pressure for a couple of minutes. So it's fully cooked, but not rubberized. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to puree it. And then I have found that for them, the extra step that I take that makes things always go down well is to then sieve it so that there aren't
bits,
because it's the bits that really turn them off from things. So I figure if I can get the taste in mm-hmm. now, then eventually we'll get to more texture.
And how are you pureeing it? Food processor or Vitamix?
I'm using, my blender for some of it. I'm actually not using my Vitamix right now because the Breville people sent me their high-speed blender and I've been using it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's fine.
But you still get bits?
So when I make a smoothie in it, it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. It's fine with the baby food, but sometimes I'm not making the volume required to get a good sort of vortex in the mm-hmm. blender. So I have one of those little mini food processors that attach to the handle of an immersion blender. Mm-hmm. And I've been using that a lot.
Because you're making small quantities.
Yeah, because I don't want it to sit around forever. And I don't want to freeze it because, because there are two of them, they're certainly going through food faster than a single baby would. So I don't want to get in the business of making a lot of baby food for the freezer. So I just make enough for
Because why?
I am bad at freezer management.
Okay.
And so I'm afraid it would get lost. I'd forget about it. And then it would get freezer burnt. Whereas if I make just enough for 3 or 4 days, we're going to eat through it. It's not going to go bad. I won't lose it in the back of the freezer.
Did I tell you I created a Google Sheet freezer inventory for myself?
That's so smart.
It's helping a lot.
Yeah. I've come to the conclusion I am bad at freezer management. So for me, it just works better to make enough for
Understood.
3 to 5 nights, and then I'll make something else. And yeah, so far, They're eating what I make. And the thing is that they're hungry. They want more food. So I need to amp up my game a little bit.
Seems like a good problem, isn't it?
It's definitely a good problem. Other than it's just time consuming. But that's life. Making food for more people than the two mm-hmm. of us, it's always going to be time consuming.
Also, they're eating different food at this particular moment. And you're still trying to figure out exactly what is the right stuff. Yes,
but I am looking forward to introducing them to more. It's been fun. It's fun to see them really dig a flavor. And hopefully
what are their favorites so far?
They really love the beet. The beet applesauce has been the biggest winner. They just keep opening their mouths for it, spoonful after spoonful. And then we've been trying different flavors of yogurt and that's been fun. It's just been a kick. It's fun to see them explore food and try more things. And yeah, I I'm looking forward to introducing them even more.
When do they get teeth?
They've been teething for a while, but it could be anywhere from now until a year old. I was, this is going to sound ridiculous, but when I was a baby, I was what they called back in the late 70s, early 80s, dentally retarded. in that I didn't get teeth till I was 14 months old.
Okay.
So it very well may be that they take after me and they don't get their teeth till late. So we'll see.
That must have an impact, though, on when they're able to transition to totally normal food, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know at what age that happens.
I mean, I think that people, like, you know, there's a lot that you can gum if it's real soft, but I think they're going to be more excited about more texture once they have some teeth.
Yeah. Like, when can they eat a grilled cheese? Oh, age two?
Yeah, maybe two.
Yeah, there's a lot I don't know about, especially because when my niece was this age, she lived so far away. Like,
yeah,
I don't remember her passing through all these stages.
I mean, it'll be interesting. But right now, they love a puree. And, you know, I tried baby-led weaning. It didn't work, but I'm sure going to feed those kids.
As in all aspects of life, you got to do what works.
Exactly.
Well, we'll stay tuned for updates as you have them with your...
I'm sure it's a big part of my life right now, making food for them.
Are you jotting down recipes at all?
It's really like one part applesauce, one part pureed squash at the moment. But as I do more, I think I will, because I feel like there must be lots of people. Like, if I write about food for a living and I felt uncertain about how to start, there must be lots of people who are uncertain how to do this.
We've probably talked about this before, but there's this cookbook, and I met this author at an event sometime, which is how I know about this. She wrote a book called Around the World in 80 Purees. And it's really about, like, introducing different flavors. Ooh, I think her purees have things like spices in them to try to develop the baby's palate.
We haven't started doing spices yet, but I'm tempted to start adding, like, cinnamon or, you know, oregano.
Around the World in 80 Purees. Look for it. I will. That, you have to admit, that's a good title.
It's a good title.
Anyway.
So what are you loving these days?
Again, it pains me to give them even more props, but a lot of my food dollars lately have been going to Rancho Gordo, and they sent in I think it was in the Recent Bean Club, this stuff called Stardust Powder.
Okay.
Which is a combination of dried chilies, crystallized lime, brown sugar, sea salt, and Mexican oregano.
Sounds really good.
I was a little skeptical at first that I would use it, and then I put it on an avocado.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Like, also delicious sprinkled on carrot sticks, as I mentioned, apple slices, jicama, mango, pineapple. It's not that time of year yet, but I bet it's going to be delicious on watermelon.
Oh, yeah.
So popcorn. Like, if you just want a little spicy, sweet, tart kick to whatever, it just really, it lends that
I love that they call it Stardust Powder. That's fun.
Yeah, it's a good name. They've got their branding down.
Yeah, they do good work over there. I've been meaning to, I have one of their cookbooks, but I've been meaning to get one of their second one, because I'm loving it so much.
I'd like to get their vegetarian cookbook. Yeah. Although I have to say, the vast majority of their beans, I just cook in a pot with half an onion and a bay leaf, and then just eat it like a soupy bean. It's so good.
I've also been meaning to get Joe Yonan's new bean
I would like
book.
To get a look at that myself.
Yeah.
Gosh. Oh, it's like a good one.
I love a bean.
I know. Maybe we should just like have a – until further notice, this is the Bean Podcast. We'll send a message to our mailing list when we get bored of this topic and move on, return to our typical obsessions of like cabbage.
We sure have like, you know, predictable things we like.
Well, we're like anybody else. We get on a kick.
It's
true.
Sometimes
separately, sometimes together. But this has been our kick now.
I love it. All right. Well, I think that's about it for this episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.